Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. This evening, we talk about something that many of us laugh about, joke about, and it occurs in so many families, including my own growing up, and that is snoring. Now, snoring may be thought about as a joke, and we become annoyed about it, but can also be a symptom of more serious problems, such as sleep apnea. And my guest this evening is snoring expert Larry Twersky, who has formed an organization called 1-800-SNORING. And you can dial that number and find out information about resources about snoring. And I'd like very much to welcome Larry Twersky, CEO of 1-800-SNORING, to WDIY and take charge of your life. Welcome, Larry Twersky.
Thank you, Eleanor. And what an appropriate topic for your show, which is Take Charge of Your Life. So many people want to just let the snoring happen, and it's annoying. And really, it could be a medical issue. And the fact that you're bringing it out to your community and talking about what they can and can't do and what they should look for, absolutely applaud you for bringing this out.
Larry, tell us, how did you become involved in this topic? You know, it's something that people really don't think about it. We kind of shrug our shoulders. We go, uh-huh, wasn't it annoying? And it may be irritating in our family lives to a degree, but we forget about it once breakfast is over. How did you become involved in the topic of snoring?
Well, to say it was my dad. He snored. He used to keep us up. And I don't know that I wanted to do the same thing with my children. My dad was usually tired when he finally got home. And that, you know, he didn't have the energy. And I think some of it was due to snoring and sleep apnea and not getting a good night's sleep. And I didn't want the same thing to happen and repeat over and over again with my children and what we were doing. So, you know, I really wanted to make sure that I not only took care of our family, but everybody's family who had this affliction of really having their dads fall asleep at inopportune times, whether it be a play, a show. And for me, it was keeping me up while we were going to go see Shamu one day. And I fell asleep during the show because I couldn't get a good night's sleep.
Now, did he fall asleep in movie theaters and things of that sort?
Everywhere. You know, it was like the running joke was just get Dad a pillow and try to quiet him down so everybody else could watch and hear what was going on. But, you know, my dad is not, you know, singled out here. It's really that age group. And the older and older we get, the more and more we lose muscle tissue, and it becomes a little bit more saggy, and we start to see more and more sleep apnea. The more obesity we see in today's communities, we find that that's also causing sleep apnea because there's a direct link between sleep apnea, snoring, and overweight.
Now, how do we are there other hidden dangers of snoring that we're not aware of?
Well, we might not be aware of them, but they're not really that hidden. Sleep apnea can cause, contribute, or exacerbate hypertension, high blood pressure, heart attacks, diabetes, erectile dysfunction, could mask itself as symptoms as ADD or other types of symptoms. You know, one thing diabetics we talk about is that the doctors tell me that the diabetics show a higher sugar in the morning because of what's going on with the body, and I can explain that a little bit further if that's of interest.
That is interesting. Are you saying that snoring may be an indication of indicates a higher level of blood sugar in the morning, or the snoring itself impacts on the raise of blood sugar in the morning?
Eleanor, great question. What the body does, and again, I just need to say that I'm not a doctor. I'm just a snoring groupie. And what happens is that the body, when you stop breathing, and sleep apnea stands for when you're sleeping, and apnea is no breath for 10 seconds or longer. So there are people who have sleep apnea who stop breathing for 10 seconds or longer, 30, 40, 50, and 60 times every hour on the hour they stop breathing. Every time your body stops breathing, it sends two signals to wake you up, because if it doesn't get you to wake up enough to start to breathe again, you die. And we saw that happen with the person in the airplane on the United flight about a week ago. He was flying from Salt Lake City. He was snoring at the beginning of the flight, and by the end of the flight, he was he had deceased.
Oh.
What happens again is, in the body, is that every single time its body tries to wake up, it sends glucose. Glucose is a sugar, and the body's natural reaction is insulin. And if what you can imagine is that if this happened 30, 40, 50, 60 times every hour on the hour, when the body was supposed to be sleeping and replenishing insulin, it actually depleted it, showing that it was getting shots, and now we see diabetics with higher levels of sugar in the morning. And people who see that should consult with their medical professional or call us on that one. The second thing that the body does is it sends an adrenaline signal, which, of course, triggers the heart to beat faster, wakes us up, and sometimes when that triggers, again, 30, 40, 50, 60 times every hour on the hour, we can see that the heart might not slow down, and that's what we see in the correlation between sleep apnea and heart issues. Pulmonologists have known this for years, and more we're getting this out in the public to understand this. And it's no coincidence that heart attacks happen about the same exact time as when we see apneic episodes or when they stop breathing. So there is a huge correlation between the two, and I hope that was an interesting explanation for your listeners.
Well, it was an interesting explanation for me because I had never known or had thought about that association. Now, you mentioned something earlier that ADD might be associated with sleep apnea. How does that correlate?
Well, I didn't say that it was correlated to ADD. What I said is that most children and adults are being diagnosed with ADD, but they haven't ruled out sleep apnea, sleep deprivation, or sleep issues. Sleep issues, deprivation, show about the same symptoms as ADD, inattentiveness, hyperactivity, unable to focus, you know, needing a lot of caffeine to self-medicate. A lot of the same symptoms are there, and what we ask people to do is just rule out sleep apnea before you put somebody on a lifetime of those types of medications. It could be just as simple as getting a great night's sleep.
Well, that's very interesting. I don't think people have really thought of evaluating whether there was a sleep apnea problem when it came to ADD. But that's a very interesting thing to bear in mind. Now, the next thing I want to mention is you talk about getting it evaluated. My own recollection of getting sleep apnea evaluated is very cumbersome. You have to go to a hospital and they can do it overnight, or they give you a mask. Tell us, what are the new possibilities in diagnosing and assessing sleep apnea? But before you do, let me just say, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. This is your host, Eleanor Barbro, and this evening we're talking with Larry Twersky, who is the CEO of 1-800-SNORING. Okay, Larry, tell us, what are the new ways of testing for sleep apnea?
Well, the ways that we find the insurance companies, you know, in their ever attempt to try to lower overall medical expense, they've actually approved a home sleep test as a precursor and even a total evaluator for testing if it's snoring, which of course is annoying, or if it's sleep apnea, which is a dangerous medical condition. And these home sleep tests are you pick something up from your medical professional, or they mail it to you in some cases, and you can either put this on your hand, on your chest, or on your head, and you go to sleep in your own bed, in your own home, with whatever environment you currently have. And some people say it's better to try to test in your own environment than take you to those hospitals or those other facilities. Now, let me just tell you that those facilities have upgraded. They almost all look like hotel rooms. Doesn't mean that you're not going to have a technician in the next room looking at what's going on, but you do have the ability to test at home, and you sleep overnight. Maybe sometimes they ask you to take the same test two or three nights in your own bed. You sleep, then you send the unit either back to your medical professional or they mail it back, and you get a report that says, was it snoring or was it sleep apnea? Did you stop breathing or was your airway partly closed? Because snoring is a partial closure of the airway. Sleep apnea is a full closure of the airway, causing, contributing, or exacerbating medical conditions.
Well, that is very interesting, and it is very interesting that they have developed less invasive ways from what you're talking about, less invasive ways of testing for sleep apnea. And what has been the discovery? Has there been, since this these new methods have been brought into play, has there been greater evaluation or greater findings of sleep apnea as opposed to just snoring?
Well, the more we can now test because we've lowered the cost of testing, the more and more we are finding that the exact percentage of people who snore that have sleep apnea, we're finding it more and more that it is a medical condition and not just a snoring issue. Because of the fact that we could test before, people would just be annoyed with it. Most people wouldn't want to go to that lab for the test. But you are right. Now that we are able to test at a lower expense in a more comfortable environment, we are seeing how much it is related to all the other, what we call comorbidities, other diseases that you are having, you know, such as the ones that we mentioned earlier, or which is the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the hypertension, and so on. We find that there is that correlation more and more that we are testing.
Yeah, I have a question to ask you, Larry. Do you snore?
Only when I drink, which would be pretty much every night. That's just a joke. It's a little bit of a joke, but it's not, because we do find that when you do take muscle relaxants or things that are like Ambien or other items that allow you your body to relax and not be as tight, we are finding that that does have it does raise the fact of people snoring. So you do find a lot of the time people say, I only snore when I drink, or I snore when I take this kind of medication. We do find that that is causing more sleep apnea in some people.
Now,
sometimes people have sleep apnea only on their back, which is called the supine position, and when they're on their back, they snore, but not on their side. We call that positional apnea, where somebody a lot of the times will push their spouse, their insignificant other, or whoever is in the bed with them over to one side or another to reduce the amount of snoring that we see.
Well, you know, this raises a very interesting question, because I'm sure that many of us have not really thought very seriously about snoring. We have really took it as a, you know, an annoying factor in our family, our partner, and have just dealt with it in that way. And you're bringing to light a much more serious side of snoring that many of us have not thought about. And we're going to talk more about what we can do and how snoring impacts on our lives when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
WDIY reaches a well-informed and passionate listening audience every day. Enhance your image with our community by becoming an underwriting supporter. Spread the word about your business in an uncluttered atmosphere of high-quality NPR and locally produced programming. Underwriting is an affordable way to reach the public radio audience, and it may be tax-deductible. To learn more, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking about the impact of a situation that comes up in too many families and relationships, and that is snoring. And we, as we discussed in the first part of the program, snoring may be something that we joke about and even be annoyed about. But as my guest this evening, Larry Twersky, who is the CEO of 1-800-SNORING, has pointed out, that snoring can be also a symptom of more serious problems, such as sleep apnea. And sleep apnea can also be an indicator of further physical problems. Tell us, Larry Twersky, CEO of 1-800-SNORING, can you give us some examples of people who have taken the sleep apnea test and how it's impacted on their health, and what they've done about it, or what they've discovered that they were surprised about?
Absolutely. The one lady, let me give you a first example of, is we had one lady who actually took the test, didn't think she had it, but she did. She went on a CPAP machine, which is one of the therapies which stands for constant positive air pressure, and we're going to talk about it because those are no longer those big masks. It's actually a small little mask that's much more quiet. She ended up wearing that, didn't change much else, didn't change much of her diet because she was already trying to be healthy. She actually was already exercising and couldn't lose the weight. By doing that one thing, by putting this mask on and wearing it overnight, she ended up dropping, over the course of 6 months, 45 pounds. By doing that, she's still on the CPAP machine, but at a much lower rate. And so it was this that helped her with her diet and helped her start metabolizing the food she was eating, helped her lose weight even though she was exercising. And so what I would encourage some of your listeners to think about is, if they're at a plateau, they might not be breathing as well, they're snoring. If they have a 17-inch neck for a male, 16-inch neck for a female, if there are other issues going on and they can't lose the weight, or they might suspect this, it might be one of the issues to see if sleep apnea is causing them to not lose the weight that they could, because the body cannot get into restorative sleep.
You know, has there been any research to indicate that that sleep apnea may impact on the thyroid gland or the metabolizing of food in the body in the way it is supposed to be metabolized?
More and more, we are seeing correlations between what diets are and what health issues are, and I believe that sleep apnea is showing the same connection as a lot of our other medical states. Can I point you to an Absolute Journal article right now?
Yeah,
not
absolutely.
While we're on, but there are more and more articles coming out with the link of what they call their comorbidities, the link between the diabetes, the link between the food that they're eating, such as we talked about, drinking alcohol before bedtime can actually increase the number of snoring or sleep apneic episodes that occur in an individual.
Well, you know, Larry, you mentioned drinking. How about eating? Many people have a midnight snack or a little snack before they go to bed. Could eating before bedtime have the same impact as drinking on sleep apnea?
Well, a lot of the times it's really more about the muscle relaxants. The wine is, of course, a muscle relaxant and allows the jaw to fall back at night, causing, again, what we were talking about. But there are other foods that might have that same effect, where you have a sugar rush and then, you know, low blood sugar right afterwards, which again could put you into that same state. So it really depends on people's own bodies, and they should check with their medical professionals, or again, they can call our number and we will find them a medical professional to see if they can get what they need for the individual needs. I don't want to help people diagnose over the phone, or especially while they're listening. I think it's more important that they that everybody's individual, and that they should take this medical decision, as you said, take charge of your own life and make the decisions that are right for them.
You know, we've talked a lot about snoring and the impact on the individual who snores. Let's address the impact of the partner or the family, and the impact of snoring on the family. Does 1-800-SNORING do anything with that impact?
Well, we don't have support groups that can hold hands and sing Kumbaya. That's not something that we do, but we can talk about something is almost as deadly as secondhand smoking, and that's secondhand snoring. People can elicit the same issues that we've been talking about, if their partner is a loud snorer. And I've heard recordings of people snoring at 30, 40 dB that is like almost a plane taking off. And if that's the kind of sound that you're sleeping next to, it allows the individual partner not to get what they call REM sleep or deep sleep, and it could cause almost the same symptoms by as the partner as we see in what we'll call the secondhand snoring. If a child is on the extra wall of a parent who snores loud, that's when we might see that they elicit sleep apnea symptoms or snoring or sleep deprivation symptoms if they're sharing a common wall. So there are different ways, and it's called secondhand snoring. You can read a lot about it. A lot of people write about it. I don't know that it's considered a medical disease yet, so that the insurance companies have to pay for it, but it is a real issue for a lot of people.
Well, now, how about can people be tested for secondhand snoring impact? Is there a way that they can be tested as the partner who has the snoring problem?
There are a lot of times that when people do a sleep apnea test, they will test the partner. The doctors will issue two tests because the symptoms are the same and see if they'll do the same test either the same day, different tests. That really depends on, A, the insurance carrier, B, the medical profession professional subscribing the test. But it would be interesting and, of course, important that both people get tested if they're both showing signs and symptoms of sleep deprivation or sleep apnea.
Well, it seems like in one case where the person is snoring, they might go to the doctor and get the assessment for sleep apnea, and perhaps the partner may go for therapy because they can't stand the snoring. So one way or the other, they're going to be evaluated. And the question is whether there's a correlation physically on with a secondhand snoring. Has there been incidents where you find people do consult for therapy because of the irritation of the problem of snoring? Or has that not been a finding?
Well, we see a lot of therapist talk that about 27% of couples that have snoring issues and a snoring partner sleep in separate rooms. As a matter of fact, I knew this one couple that we actually fixed the man's snoring. One of our doctors fixed the man's snoring, and the wife liked her room so much by herself, she still wouldn't let him back in. So even though he fixed the problem, they still slept in separate rooms because she was so used to it by that time. So while I can't promise everybody we'd come back in the same room, it does cause marital rifts. The more we're irritable, the more that we find that we can't cope with the day because of a good night's sleep, it does cause problems in the family, and I think that's what you're talking about.
Yes, and well, I was interested to hear whether there were any findings on that. Now, I want to talk about something else you mentioned earlier in the program, and that was positional sleep apnea. Are there ways of testing for positional sleep apnea? And tell us again what you mean by positional sleep apnea.
Well, when people take the home sleep test, the sleep test. Knows what position you were in if you had an apneic episode or if you started snoring loud or what the other issues were. So a positional apneic would be somebody who actually was on their back or what the doctors call the supine position, and that when they're on their back, gravity is pulling their tongue back into their throat and basically helping them choke to death. And so if somebody in that position on their back moves to their side, and in on their side position, they don't have apneic episodes or less of them. That is what the medical industry calls a positional apneic. They have loss of breath when they're on their back or on one side or another more than any other side. Typically, it'd be on their back due to gravity. But that would be a positional apneic. And yes, the home sleep test or even the lab test will verify that and will be able to see how many hours you were on each position and if apnics occurred.
Now, is it only doctors, or did I hear you mention earlier that maybe dentists might be also be able to provide that kind of testing? Is there any validity in that statement?
Well, there's a little bit of validity that the dentist can actually do the therapy for it, but you need an MD to write what we'll call a prescription or an RX for either testing. A dentist can say, yes, this person needs to be tested in most states. In some states like New Jersey, the dentist can't even talk about the sleep test. But in other areas, the dentist can recommend the test, but they can't write the prescription for the therapy. Now, it's interesting to know that a dentist has probably a great chance of fixing a positional apnea by using just a mouthpiece. It's like a double-sided mouth guard that people wear on there at night, and it helps move the jaw slightly forward or at what we'll call edge-to-edge, where your teeth are just matching up, and that what it will do is not allow the jaw to fall back at night when they're in the relaxed position, or, as we said, positional apnea, when they're on their back, the jaw is still going to stay in a forward or stable position, so it can't do any fall back and collapse the airway or cause the tongue to be in the airway. So lots of great things that a dentist can do to help a patient who has sleep apnea, and you are not doomed to having a CPAP machine, which, again, most people think were those big machines. They're no longer big anymore. They're no longer loud anymore. In most instances, they're a small unit with a little nasal mask that absolutely can help save people's lives.
Well, you know, I think this has been a very interesting talk, Larry, because I don't think that many of us really recognize the impact that snoring had on our physical well-being. Most of us have taken this as simply an annoying condition. I know my dad snored a lot, and I think my dad also, you know, my mother would have liked him to move to a different place in the house. And we find it annoying and we do joke about it. But what you have pointed out is this is no joking matter. This is a sign that we need to look into our physical well-being and to make sure that we're not suffering from sleep apnea and not just an annoying noise in our rooms. And I want to thank you, Larry Twersky, the CEO of 1-800-SNORING, for helping us to take charge of our lives by understanding that while we joke about snoring, it can often be a symptom of a more serious problem, such as sleep apnea. And while sleep apnea is definitely connected to a number of serious diseases, a whopping 77% of the population remain undiagnosed. Thank you for making us aware of the problem, other than the irritation and also the resources available for diagnosing the physical ailment. And if they need any help or want any more information, they can call 1-800-SNORING, and they will get information about the problem of snoring. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.